The islands are important because they are the only place in the world where renewable energy resources such as wind and solar are very prevalent, and there's a really, really high cost of incumbent power. So we're able to see what a fully sustainable renewable energy electricity system looks like without subsidies and tax incentive to the natural capitalistic market.
Welcome to the Blue Continent Podcast. I'm your host, Brennan Pertzer, International Research Coordinator
for the Blue Continent Alliance, the Blue Continent Podcast, and your Blue Continent.
What this program is about, this podcast, what makes it unique is finding people who have knowledge or expertise or have worked to address in a sustainable way a lot of global development issues.
My guest today is Christopher Burgess, who's the Projects Director of the Rocky Mountain Institute. Chris has over 15 years of experience as an environmental professional and project manager with a variety of multidisciplinary energy and infrastructure projects. The Rocky Mountain Institute is a Colorado-based think tank with a mission to transform global energy to create a clean, prosperous, and secure low-carbon future for the planet.
Chris, nice to see you, man.
Yeah, man.
I know you're a busy guy, and so I appreciate you taking the time to meet with me. I got a chance to hear your presentation over at the RT Park here on St. Croix. You spent a lot of time out here?
In the islands in general, yes. USVI, I've been there a handful of times. Been to St. Croix, been to St. Thomas, been to St. John many times. And just trying to help the government and the utility accelerate their transition to renewables.
Well, that is certainly a worthy goal. So in the presentation, you talked about, well, first of all, you're with the Rocky Mountain Institute. And tell me, how did RMI get involved in the Caribbean? Like, obviously, that's an interesting, you know, unexpected.
Yeah. Range. So RMI is a, you know, 35-plus-year-old think tank founded by Amory Lovins. And originally on energy efficiency and the enormous opportunity, tremendous opportunity that energy efficiency gives, you know, power systems and transportation systems across the world. But predominantly, they focus on U.S. policy and influence in, you know, U.S. markets. And it wasn't until the Carbon War Room and Rocky Mountain Institute decided to merge, or more specifically, RMI decided to acquire the Carbon War Room in 2015, did Rocky Mountain Institute take a good hard look at the islands. And the islands are important because they are the only place in the world where the renewable energy resources such as wind and solar are very prevalent. And there's a really, really high cost of incumbent power, right? So we're able to see what a fully sustainable renewable energy electricity system looks like without all kinds of subsidies and tax incentives and things that aren't, you know, to the natural capitalistic market.
You're saying that dynamic of the existence of these potential alternatives to be developed and the high cost of everything else creates a natural inclination or funding mechanism to invest in their own energy future.
Correct. Right. So it's, you know, it's the ultimate pilot project.
Yeah. Yeah. They have the same situation with food, which was another topic covered the following day after your presentation at the RT Park. I'm actually going to be doing a show with the RT Park folks. Yeah, they've got a lot of ambitious ideas that are grounded in common sense too. You were mentioning the different parts of the region and places you've been here working on these efficiency projects. Can you remark on some of the more interesting ones that probably a casual observer has not experienced?
Yeah, in the region, when we first entered in 2015, there was, you know, barely any renewable energy installed, but yet they had nearly a decade of assessments that had taken place, and We really wanted to kind of peel back the hood and see what was the problem. And a lot of it just has to do with the misalignment between the government and the utilities about what's feasible, what makes practical sense, and what really saves the utility and therefore the customer money. And the first project that we got into was in St. Lucia, where we brought the utility, which is only partially government owned. It's actually privately held, commercially held as well. Brought them to the table with the government and charted out a pathway to meet their, you know, climate goals and help lower the cost of the electricity system in St. Lucia. And that was called the National Energy Transition Strategy, or the NETS, which is available on our website or the St. Lucian government website. And it's really a great document because it shows all the stakeholders' viewpoints. And, you know, RMI can be fact-based and objective because we're funded by grants and not by either the government or the utility. So it's very neutral in that way. And it really found that, you know, St. Lucia could indeed not only meet but exceed their INDC targets with the UN by simply incentivizing commercial and residential solar, as well as utility-owned solar, in addition to pursuing geothermal and a wind farm. And so it got everybody on the same page. It is, was adopted by that government. That government was voted out of power, I think 2016 or 17. And the new government has adopted it as well. So it's stood the test of you know, the bipartisanship, you know, or the partisanship. So anyway, that was not just a, you know, another assessment or another strategy document on a shelf. It's actually a living, you know, strategy that's been adopted by the utility and the government, and there's been significant investments toward those first projects. So right on the heels of the NETS process, we were able to identify, de-risk, develop, procure, and oversee the development of their first utility scale solar farm, which is right outside the international airport. So that was a 3 megawatt ground mount solar, one of the first ones in the OECS, which is the Eastern Caribbean states. And, you know, a real kind of feather in the cap for St. Lucia to start their energy transition. We were able to do the same thing for St. Vincent as well, Brennan. And we were able to do the same thing for Montserrat, starting the same process in BVI, you know, the islands just next to you, and did the same thing with the same basically results of the first renewable energy project installed in Bahamas as well.
And this is a, you've referred to solar metering in your presentation, and that was, is that tied into this?
Solar metering? Oh, you mean how the customer can basically net meter or net bill their energy?
Yeah, and the smart grid, the virtual smart grid was also in your presentation.
Right. So solar metering is a really simple concept. If you install solar panels on your roof there in St. Croix, you're going to utilize the electrons and the power from those panels first and foremost. But if you're not home and none of your appliances are on, that extra energy just gets fed back to Wampa and credited to your bill. So that's how that works.
And that also depends on contracts that stipulate that. And if you're in a developing nation that hasn't doesn't have a contract to take that, you can choose to capture some of that energy in batteries, right? And then put in the inverter.
Yeah, up until quite recently, you know, batteries were just out of the reach from a cost perspective, and people really invested in those for resiliency or reliability purposes. But yeah, to your point now, if the utility is only going to give you, you know, 10 cents for the power and retail is 40, you know, you can really find a business case to install batteries instead of putting that power back to the grid where you're only getting reimbursed 10 cents. You can put it in your own batteries where you get to utilize the full retail potential of that power. So yeah, battery storage is becoming more and more affordable as not just the years, but the quarters go by. A lot of island residents and businesses are finding batteries very useful economically and for reliability and resiliency purposes.
Well, that makes sense. One of the projects you're doing here is creating like a mini grid on St. John, right? With a tie-in to St. Thomas, because those islands are close together. So you have that stability and as much self-reliance as possible, right?
Exactly. And, you know, for much as ARM, I'd like to take credit for that. That really is a WAMPA brainchild with FEMA. So after Hurricane Irma, St. John was out of power for many months. And wow. A lot of it had to do with the vulnerability of that submarine cable and some of the issues on that end of St. Thomas from an electrical infrastructure standpoint. And so they're really at the mercy of St. Thomas getting back, particularly in that location, before they could get back online. So the microgrid would do two things. One, it would provide solar and battery services to both St. Thomas and St. John. You would locate it on St. John. So if a submarine cable was ever compromised again, or if St. Thomas said it had any electrical issues or another storm came by, St. John could literally decouple and run power from its own island to its own ratepayers and citizens. It's a very modern project. Hasn't been done before anywhere in the Caribbean, where you have kind of a distributed asset like solar away from the main power center of another island, or the main power plant, so to speak.
That was going to be my next question, actually, was if that type of arrangement is practical and functions as expected, are you assessing if there are other island pairings that would make sense to do a similar thing, even if they were transnational borders there?
Oh, transnational, no. I think that gets complicated with utility, monopolies and arrangements. But if you look in the Caribbean, there are many multi-island nations, right? Bahamas being one. They had 700 islands in Key.
Yeah.
So doing that quite a bit in the Bahamas after Hurricane Dorian, we were asked to come in and help re-architect the grid on Abaco to make it more segmented and less vulnerable to one central point of failure. So we're doing the exact same thing on that island, where we're not segmenting a separate island, although we are doing that in one location. We're really segmenting the island itself. So there's a north segment, south segment, and then two critical facility segments in Marsh Harbor, which is the main population center. So to your question, I would see a St. Croix really running itself as it does now, but perhaps being able to segment certain provinces or townships or, facilities on St. Croix to make it more resilient. Have seen the news or, follow some of the microgrid industry news. Puerto Rico just officially accepted the new architecture of the grid, which will be segmented microgrids. And they rejected gas as a centralized fossil generator and accepted solar and battery as a distributed generation. So this is all happening throughout the region. And, proud to say that my colleague Roy Torbert and his team at RMI were really behind some of the analysis and facts and data that supported that decision by Puerto Rican government.
It seems like St. Vincent would be a natural one as well for this kind of system.
Exactly. Yeah, St. Vincent, the Grenadines, there's several Grenadines that are part of that multi-island nation, and they are definitely looking into solar battery to really help their resiliency and their sustainability goals.
Yeah. So here's a question I had when I was listening to your presentation, but I didn't really have the opportunity to ask it, and I don't know if how closely it circulates to your sphere of knowledge, but the OTEC, I wanted to know if OTEC, it's been explored here and there have been some type of agreement signed with USVI for the development of that technology. Do you know where that stands? I've been trying to reach the company that took it on to get to speak with them like I'm speaking to you, but haven't been able to do that.
Yeah, OTEC's a tough one. I think, we're doing a feasibility study right now for Bermuda.
We should explain that real quick in case any of my audience doesn't know what OTEC is.
Ocean Technology.
Exchange.
Conversion. So basically, they're taking advantage of the thermocline, which is the difference in temperature between deep depths and shallow depths. It's really not commercial. And I think that's the issue is, Rocky Mountain Institute doesn't put a lot of time, talent, resources and things that aren't proven commercially. We're not a research and development shop. We certainly have respect for new technologies and the, the pathway and the life cycle they have to take. And sometimes that's decades, and look how far solar has come. I think there were solar panels on some of the first satellites and some of the first Apollo missions, and that was in the 60s. And here we are, sure, right, 40 plus years later, where it's finally a commercial technologies for most of the world. So you got to put that in full perspective.
I have to say, though, I live with somebody who was a scientist who used to study this years and years ago. He brought me a book from an international conference from about 1989 or something about OTEC. And they're like, yeah, we got like 15 projects going around the world. They're looking really promising. Everything's moving forward. And I'm like, checking my watch here. This is like 1989?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. We just got to put in perspective where the levelized cost of energy was back then.
Yeah.
And if you can't become more and more efficient, like wind and solar have been able to become more and more efficient each year, kind of like, this right here. If you would have had this type of computing technology in 1989, they would have thought you were another planet, right?
Exactly. So, also fracking came along and reduced the cost of energy in general as well. So,
exactly. Yeah. So the things that don't improve over time tend to get left behind. One of the real sad stories is geothermal, because geothermal is obviously a proven technology.
Yeah.
Iceland runs their entire economy off of geothermal.
Yeah.
But the Caribbean has not been able to get the first commercial project done yet. I think outside of, one of the French islands, which is basically part of France and fully subsidized. It's just tough, right? There's a lot of variables that go into play. And when you add in all the roads and the transmission lines and displacing people and things of that nature, the levelized cost of energy is probably not much better than burning diesel, but it's a lot cleaner, right? And it's an indigenous resource, so you want to pursue it. And then other technologies like solar and wind come around and really have that cost or take that cost in the three quarters, and it's really hard to deny the economics at that point. So OTEC, geothermal, wave technology, tidal technology, all these things are not at the commercial scale or commercial viability in the Caribbean just yet.
Well, there's that, and there's the fact that the orientation of RMI is about saving through efficiency, right? So efficiency is always a proven concept. It's
the cheapest investment, right? The megawatt. So efficiency first, and then least cost economics after that. And we're not bashful. We'll look at gas, we'll look at heavy fuel, we'll look at coal, we'll look at anything, in a very objective way to show these island nations what these different generation sources can provide. And really, 9 times out of 10, it's solar and battery that makes it to the top of the list.
And they keep getting better every year anyway,
Yeah, so. Yeah. Matter of fact, we've had to update our projections, slide those down about 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Because things are moving pretty quickly on the cost efficiency side.
Okay. Well, I feel like you've brought up a lot of ideas that were should be enlightening to a lot of people who hadn't thought about them before. Anything else you want to leave my readers or my viewers and listeners with.
Sure. I mean, you know, I think the vision for USVI is not much different than the vision for a lot of these other countries that has come out of a multi-stakeholder process where you have, you know, commercial actors, utility actors, government practitioners that really want their island to be self-sustaining. They want to create jobs. Mm-hmm. They don't want to export their hard-earned dollars offshore, either to Houston or to Venezuela. And, you know, they want resiliency as well. And we've been working really hard to show that the grid, as it's built now, is quite antiquated. You know, it's technologies from the literally 30s, 40s, and 50s. That there's a lot of technology now that can make the grid, excuse me, very robust, very resilient, and segmented with solar battery and switching. So basically when one side of the island is offline, the other side of the island can be online, and vice versa. Very much how the modern internet works. You know,
yeah.
If there's a car crash on my corner and the fiber optic line is severed on the, you know, in the culvert or in the conduit or on top of the telephone pole, your internet doesn't flinch. And, you know, my internet, you know, may come right back. Yeah. You know what I mean?
There's so another part to it. It's like your brain. You know?
So many. It's not. There's not. You know, single points of failure. And the great thing is, there's not really a huge investment to make the architecture of the grid work that way. And what's really inspiring is that each and every person in the USVI that owns a rooftop or owns a plot of land or a piece of parking lot can contribute to that acceleration of the modern energy grid, because they can not only be consumers of energy, but they can also be producers of energy. So exciting times, and we're excited to work in the Caribbean where, you know, these things can be accelerated a lot faster than in the continental countries.
I agree. Yeah, there are so many opportunities for fast, rapid development, because, you know, it's needed here and everybody can see it, you know. Okay, well, thanks so much. And if people want more information about RMI, where can they find it?
RMI.org.
Have them check it out.
All right.
Thanks. You have thanks. A wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Thanks a lot.
I'd like to thank Christopher Burgess, my guest today, as well as the wonderful musicians you heard in the background. You heard the True Tones of St. Lucia, as well as Montserrat's Arrow, whom you'd recognize from the 1983 mega hit Hot Hot Hot, the Puerto Rican jazz fusion band Cafes, and finally Vincentian guitar and violinist Darren Andrews.
And of course our theme music, The Lone Ranger by Quantum Jump.
Thanks everybody for listening to the Blue Continent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And we hope you'll subscribe and join us again. Tell others about us. This podcast is also available in a raw video format found on our Blue Continent Alliance Facebook page. If you'd like to see our mini documentaries from around the world, visit the Blue Continent YouTube page today. Thanks again for listening. Take care.